Érettségi vizsga angol nyelvből. Hallott szöveg értése emelt szint.
Welcome to the listening component of the Matura examination. The listening material and the instructions are recorded on this CD, and the tasks and instructions are printed in your test booklet. There will be three tasks, and every recording will be played twice. The tasks will begin with some music, and then you will hear, and you can also read, the instructions to the task. This will be followed by a silent period on the CD, in order to give you some time to look at the task in your test booklet before hearing the text. Then we will play the recording in one piece. After another short silent period, we will play the recording for the second time, but now in shorter sections and with breaks between the sections, in order to give you enough time to write down your answers. You will also have some time to check your work at the end of each task. Please note that the first item in each task, marked with a tick, is always an example. The whole test is about 30 minutes long. Good luck! Task 1. In this section, you will hear a report about an interesting survey. Your task is to write the letter of the correct answer in the boxes on the right. First, you will have some time to look at the task, and then we will play the whole recording in one piece. Then, after a short pause, you will hear the recording again, but this time we will play the text in shorter sections to give you enough time to write down your answers. Now, look at the task in your booklet. Now, listen to the recording.
It's lunchtime in Mexico City, and a young man follows a slim girl wearing dark glasses into a restaurant. Without looking behind her, she lets the heavy glass door swing closed, almost smashing him in the face. In a small shop in Seoul, a female customer wants to buy a cheap pen. 56-year-old store owner Yang Kim takes the time to show her different models. When she buys the pen, he takes the time to say a friendly thank you. A chill wind is blowing on a late winter Wednesday morning at a busy subway exit in Toronto. 20-year-old Monica Jones struggles through the rush hour crowds on her way to work when a woman ahead of her drops a folder, scattering papers everywhere. People walk by, but Monica takes a minute to stop and help the woman pick up her documents, handing them over one by one. When thanked, she smiles kindly and says, "No problem." The young man risking a broken nose, the customer in Korea, and the woman with the documents were no ordinary members of the public. Each was a Reader's Digest researcher taking part in a unique survey to see how helpful and polite people are around the world. This survey was carried out the following way. Reader's Digest sent out undercover reporters, half of them men, half women, in 35 countries to assess the citizens of their biggest cities. In each location, they conducted three tests. First, the reporters walked into public buildings 20 times behind people to see if they would hold the door open for them. Secondly, they bought small items from 20 stores and recorded whether the sales assistant said thank you. Last, they dropped a folder full of paper in 20 busy locations to see if anyone would help pick them up. To allow them to compare cities, the reporters awarded 1 point for each positive outcome and nothing for a negative one, giving each city a maximum score of 60. So, Which cities emerged as most polite? Here's the top three: New York, Zurich, and Toronto.
Keep on the sunny side, always on the sunny side. Keep on the sunny side of life. It will help us every day, it will brighten all the way, if we keep on the sunny side of life.
Now, listen to the recording again. Remember that this time we will play the recording in shorter sections.
It's lunchtime in Mexico City, and a young man follows a slim girl wearing dark glasses into a restaurant. Without looking behind her, she lets the heavy glass door swing closed, almost smashing him in the face. In a small shop in Seoul, a female customer wants to buy a cheap pen. 56-year-old store owner Yang Kim takes the time to show her different models. When she buys the pen, he takes the time to say a friendly thank you. A chill wind is blowing on a late winter Wednesday morning at a busy subway exit in Toronto. 20-year-old Monica Jones struggles through the rush hour crowds on her way to work when a woman ahead of her drops a folder, scattering papers everywhere. People walk by, but Monica takes a minute to stop and help the woman pick up her documents, handing them over one by one. When thanked, she smiles kindly and says, "No problem." The young man risking a broken nose, the customer in Korea, and the woman with the documents were no ordinary members of the public. Each was a Reader's Digest researcher taking part in a unique survey to see how helpful and polite people are around the world. This survey was carried out the following way. Reader's Digest sent out undercover reporters, half of them men, half women, in 35 countries to assess the citizens of their biggest cities. In each location, they conducted three tests. First, the reporters walked into public buildings 20 times behind people to see if they would hold the door open for them. Secondly, they bought small items from 20 stores and recorded whether the sales assistant said thank you. Last, they dropped a folder full of paper in 20 busy locations to see if anyone would help pick them up. To allow them to compare cities, the reporters awarded 1 point for each positive outcome and nothing for a negative one, giving each city a maximum score of 60. So, which cities emerged as most polite? Here's the top three: New York, Zurich, and Toronto.
Keep on the sunny side, always on the sunny side. Keep on the sunny side of life. It will help us every day, it will brighten all the way, if we keep on the sunny side of life.
This is the end of task one. Task 2. In this section, you will hear a police officer talk about recent advances in investigation techniques. Your task is to complete the sentences with one word or number in each gap. First, you will have some time to look at the task, and then we will play the whole recording in one piece. Then, after a short pause, you will hear the recording again. But this time, we will play the text in shorter sections to give you enough time to write down your answers. Now, look at the task in your booklet. Now listen to the recording.
Well, I've been a police officer for more than 20 years now, but I can tell you that the past 5 years have brought about far more changes in our day-to-day work than the previous 15 years put together. Obviously, new developments in science have played a very important role in these changes, but the impact of new scientific discoveries has been more gradual. The real revolutionary changes have been brought about by the widespread use of computers in police work. Let me just give you an example. The traditional method of holding an identification parade, or line-up, as our American colleagues call it, you know, when an eyewitness might identify a suspect in the flesh, is rapidly becoming a thing of the past. It was time-consuming and expensive, with only a handful of police stations capable of running a full parade. I'm sure you've all seen it on TV. You know, the police had to come up with 8 fairly similar people for a parade, and the witnesses had to stand behind a 2-way mirror so that they were not intimidated by the suspects. Now, at least here in Britain, it's done in a completely different way. We use computers for the parade, and the whole identification procedure is done electronically. It's become a computerized video parade. What happens today is that our specially trained officers draw from a database of several thousand individuals on video, who, by the way, pick up £80 for a few minutes of their time, so there's no shortage of willing contributors. You know, just ordinary people who pop into the station for whatever reason. Each short clip has the same basic shape. The subject sits in front of a white background looking straight into the camera for 5 seconds, until a short bleep signals that they are to look to the right. 5 seconds later, another bleep indicates that they should turn the other way. Finally, after 5 seconds again, they turn back to the camera and stare at it for another 5 seconds until the clip ends. When it comes to a particular identification parade, officers use 6 different search criteria to narrow down those chosen to a similar age and ethnic background, those whose height, weight, and colouring are within acceptable parameters. They assemble 8 20-second clips and use them alongside the clip they've already shot of the suspect. Now it is simply a question of editing them together into a sequence, a montage for the witness to watch, with random selection of the chosen extracts built into the software. All the officer has to do is push the button and let the computer do it all for him. It doesn't take longer than 3 or 4 minutes in all. Incidentally, the video parade itself is also videoed to make sure that everything is done properly.
Now listen to the recording again. Remember that this time we will play the recording in shorter sections.
Well, I've been a police officer for more than 20 years now, but I can tell you that the past 5 years have brought about far more changes in our day-to-day work than the previous 15 years put together. Obviously, new developments in science have played a very important role in these changes, but the impact of new scientific discoveries has been more gradual. The real revolutionary changes have been brought about by the widespread use of computers in police work. Let me just give you an example. The traditional method of holding an identification parade, or line-up, as our American colleagues call it, you know, when an eyewitness might identify a suspect in the flesh, is rapidly becoming a thing of the past. It was time-consuming and expensive, with only a handful of police stations capable of running a full parade. I'm sure you've all seen it on TV. You know, the police had to come up with 8 fairly similar people for a parade, and the witnesses had to stand behind a 2-way mirror so that they were not intimidated by the suspects. Now, at least here in Britain, it's done in a completely different way. We use computers for the parade, and the whole identification procedure is done electronically. It's become a computerized video parade. What happens today is that our specially trained officers draw from a database of several thousand individuals on video, who, by the way, pick up £80 for a few minutes of their time, so there's no shortage of willing contributors. You know, just ordinary people who pop into the station for whatever reason. Each short clip has the same basic shape. The subject sits in front of a white background looking straight into the camera for 5 seconds, until a short bleep signals that they are to look to the right. 5 seconds later, another bleep indicates that they should turn the other way. Finally, after 5 seconds again, they turn back to the camera and stare at it for another 5 seconds until the clip ends. When it comes to a particular identification parade, officers use 6 different search criteria to narrow down those chosen to a similar age and ethnic background, those whose height, weight, and colouring are within acceptable parameters. They assemble 8 20-second clips and use them alongside the clip they've already shot of the suspect. Now it is simply a question of editing them together into a sequence, a montage for the witness to watch, with random selection of the chosen extracts built into the software. All the officer has to do is push the button and let the computer do it all for him. It doesn't take longer than 3 or 4 minutes in all. Incidentally, the video parade itself is also videoed to make sure that everything is done properly.
This is the end of Task 2. Task 3. In this section, you will hear an interview with an American man who won a lot of money on the lottery. Your task is to decide whether the following statements are true, false, or we do not know because the text does not say, and write the appropriate letter on the boxes on the right. Write A if the statement is true, write B if the statement is false, and write C if the text does not say. First, you will have some time to look at the task, and then we will play the whole recording in one piece. Then, after a short pause, you will hear the recording again, but this time we will play the text in shorter sections to give you enough time to write down your answers. Now, look at the task in your booklet. Now, listen to the recording.
Brad Duke, aged 34, the manager of a fitness center in Idaho, U.S., pocketed a net sum of $85 million after winning the lottery jackpot in 2007. I asked Duke what he's done with his newfound fortune so far. Hi, Duke. Did you often buy lottery tickets, or was this a one-time thing?
Well, I played the lottery often when I won. I developed a little numbering system. I looked at the most recent lottery numbers over the last 6 months. I took the set of 15 numbers that were most commonly coming up. My lottery numbers were going to be those 15. So I started messing around with them, and I was starting to win smaller amounts, like $150 and $500.
So many lottery winners have sad endings. Did you worry about that?
I've always handled responsibility pretty well. I was actually quiet about winning for a month before I decided to come out. During that time, I was getting done as much research as I could on existing lottery winners and what their stories were. Believe it or not, most of them lose all the money within a short amount of time, usually in less than 10 years. Not me, though. I wanted to make the most of the opportunity that was given to me. So I put together a team with the intent of becoming a billionaire. So I spent the first month of my new life assembling a team of financial advisors.
So what did you do with the money then?
Well, I eventually invested about half of my winnings, $45 million in fact, in safe, low-risk investments, and about $35 million in aggressive investments like oil and gas and real estate. And I think it was really a very good idea. We've done very well for the first year and a half. And my total net worth right now is, well, it's at an unofficial value of about $130 million.
What was your first major purchase?
Yeah, a $63,000 trip to Tahiti for me and 17 of my friends. And I also took my family on a nice long cruise in the Caribbean.
What about a big new house or a fancy new car?
No, I guess I'm more worried about spending time on my investments and doing fun things with my family and friends. I will have a new home and a great car at some point, but just not now.
You must have treated yourself to something.
I did buy some bicycles, including a $12,000 BMC road bike. All in all, I guess I've spent, well, about $65,000 on my bikes, and I probably own more than 17 bikes now. I also bought a 2002 VW Jetta, and I gave my 2005 Jetta to my nephew. So it's the exact same car, except for his is white and mine is black.
You had a newer car that you gave to your nephew, and you bought an older car?
Yeah, that's correct. I wanted a black Jetta with a black interior. Believe it or not, those are really hard to find.
What happened to your job at the fitness center?
Yes, I still teach a workout class there twice a week. I took some time off after the whole thing because I had to spend a lot of time with my investments at the beginning. So I had to get out of there for a while. But when I went back, the people I'd been teaching for the last 8 years were still the same people, and I was still the same instructor.
Are you happier since you won the money?
Absolutely. When it comes down to it, I get to do the things professionally that I've always wanted to do. I get to invent a piece of gym equipment for my fitness center that I've always been thinking about doing. And I also get to give back to some people that have given to me over the years.
Now, listen to the recording again. Remember that this time we will play the recording in shorter sections.
Brad Duke, aged 34, the manager of a fitness center in Idaho, U.S., pocketed a net sum of $85 million after winning the lottery jackpot in 2007. I asked Duke what he's done with his newfound fortune so far. Hi, Duke. Did you often buy lottery tickets, or was this a one-time thing?
Well, I played the lottery often when I won. I developed a little numbering system. I looked at the most recent lottery numbers over the last 6 months. I took the set of 15 numbers that were most commonly coming up. My lottery numbers were going to be those 15. So I started messing around with them, and I was starting to win smaller amounts, like $150 and $500.
So many lottery winners have sad endings. Did you worry about that?
I've always handled responsibility pretty well. I was actually quiet about winning for a month before I decided to come out. During that time, I was getting done as much research as I could on existing lottery winners and what their stories were. Believe it or not, most of them lose all the money within a short amount of time, usually in less than 10 years. Not me, though. I wanted to make the most of the opportunity that was given to me. So I put together a team with the intent of becoming a billionaire. So I spent the first month of my new life assembling a team of financial advisors.
So what did you do with the money then?
Well, I eventually invested about half of my winnings, $45 million in fact, in safe, low-risk investments, and about $35 million in aggressive investments like oil and gas and real estate. And I think it was really a very good idea. We've done very well for the first year and a half, and my total net worth right now is, well, it's at an unofficial value of about $130 million.
What was your first major purchase?
Yeah, a $63,000 trip to Tahiti for me and 17 of my friends. And I also took my family on a nice long cruise in the Caribbean.
What about a big new house or a fancy new car?
No, I guess I'm more worried about spending time on my investments and doing fun things with my family and friends. I will have a new home and a great car at some point, but just not now.
You must have treated yourself to something.
I did buy some bicycles, including a $12,000 BMC road bike. All in all, I guess I've spent, well, about $65,000 on my bikes, and I probably own more than 17 bikes now. I also bought a 2002 VW Jetta, and I gave my 2005 Jetta to my nephew. So it's the exact same car, except for his is white and mine is black.
You had a newer car that you gave to your nephew, and you bought an older car?
Yeah, that's correct. I wanted a black Jetta with a black interior. Believe it or not, those are really hard to find.
What happened to your job at the fitness center?
Yes, I still teach a workout class there twice a week. I took some time off after the whole thing because I had to spend a lot of time with my investments at the beginning. So I had to get out of there for a while, but when I went back, the people I'd been teaching for the last 8 years were still the same people, and I was still the same instructor.
Are you happier since you won the money?
Absolutely. When it comes down to it, I get to do the things professionally that I've always wanted to do. I get to invent a piece of gym equipment for my fitness center that I've always been thinking about doing. And I also get to give back to some people that have given to me over the years.
This is the end of Task 3 and also the end of the listening exam.